Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And Jim, when we said goodbye on Friday, heading into the weekend, we had no idea what type of NFL weekend was ahead of us, although by the time Sunday rolled around, we had a little bit of an idea, but we still didn't know. I think the reverberations are still being felt throughout the league and throughout America, and there's going to be great discussion about it for days, possibly weeks to come. How in the world did both the Bears and the Jets win on Sunday?
Yeah, lest anyone have any illusions, this is the big story of the week. Yeah, the president said something. Some guys go, no, forget all that stuff. Somehow the Bears managed to beat the Pittsburgh Steelers, a pretty darn good team. I'm not trying to tweak you too much. They made a comical error.
Yes.
Locking a field goal, returning it almost all the way, and then managing to botch it by fumbling on the 1 yard line. They eventually kicked a field goal at the end of that drive, right?
I don't even remember.
Okay. So you may have blocked it out. It's understandable. But nonetheless, a huge win, and the Bears, everyone in Chicago should be cheering. It's almost as big a deal as the New York Jets' a collective decision to tank their effort to tank the season. This is the nature of being a Jets fan in 2017. We're like, yeah, we won. Oh, what a great win. Ah, darn it. We're probably further away from the number one overall pick and getting Sam Darnold. But nonetheless, I had a great weekend of football. I know lots of other people were upset, but you and I are just going to take a few moments to gloat over Pittsburgh Steelers fans and Miami Dolphin fans, and lest anyone think we're being mean about it or cruel or you know, unsportsmanlike conduct. Let's observe. Look, Greg, we're not going to get that many chances to do this year. So we might as well take the opportunities while we got them.
No. Jay Cutler and being distracted by politics can cure a myriad of problems for both of our teams. So let's talk about this. We're not done talking about the Pittsburgh Steelers yet, by the way. But let's get into the national anthem controversy, and that'll consume our first two martinis here. Let's begin Friday evening in Huntsville, Alabama. President Trump is stumping for interim and incumbent Alabama Republican Senator Luther Strange, who is headed towards a runoff election tomorrow with Roy Moore. Moore has a slight lead, according to most polls. The winner advances to the final election in December against the Democrat who's already been decided in this race. Here is what Trump said that ultimately led to all the protests we saw on Sunday.
Everyone in this arena tonight are unified by the same great American values. We're proud of our country. We respect our flag. Wouldn't you love to see one of these NFL owners, when somebody disrespects our flag, to say, get that son of a bitch off the field right now. Out. He's fired. He's fired!
Jim, the first part was okay. We respect, obviously, or unified by values. We unify and respect our flag. But just like what we talked about with the Jemele Hill situation a week or two ago, whenever that was, the idea of the president of the United States deciding that people should be fired for holding beliefs as disgusting and unseemly as we think they are and in disrespecting the flag, we certainly don't agree with it. We've talked about it a lot and how that's not the appropriate way to demonstrate, in our estimation, frustrations you have with things that are going on in society. For the president of the United States to decide who should be able to keep their job by expressing themselves, which they have a constitutional right to do, is pretty disturbing.
It is. There's a very big difference when you or I or any old sports fan or somebody else on the radio or you know, columnist or somebody says that person's, you know, viewpoint is terrible and they should be fired for it. It is very different when the president of the United States does this. And it's not because Jim and Greg are upset that Trump is doing their shtick. The problem is that the president is the head of state. The president is the head of the executive branch of the federal government. And probably most people recognize the federal government has extensive interactions with just about every big institution in America, including the National Football League. The league has an antitrust exemption. The league negotiates things like military flyovers at games, security for the Super Bowl and other big events, tax laws, right? I mean, if you're a big institution like the NFL, a collection of businesses, you're going to interact with the government a lot. And there will be times you're going to ask the government, can you do X? Or can you do Y? The government may say yes, the government may say no. But now the question will be, if let's say, you know, Department of Homeland Security wants the NFL to cover more of the costs for security for the Super Bowl or something like that, or the Pentagon won't let them use jets for a flyover of a game or something like that. Will that be because of the merits of the decision? Or will that be because the President of the United States is fighting with the league? This is why you don't want the President of the United States weighing in on every little controversy that comes down the pipe. I don't dispute. In fact, on this, I largely agree with the President. I don't like seeing somebody kneeling during the State of the Union. Boy, there's a Freudian slip. I don't like to see somebody kneeling during the national anthem. And I think there are better and more effective ways to make the point that you want to make. I think it's a distraction. I think it's unnecessarily antagonistic. I think it certainly doesn't help if somebody like Kaepernick, who infamously wore the cops as pig socks and wore the Fidel Castro T-shirt. You know, that's all of this is distracting from the point that I assume these players want to make about the treatment of African-Americans by the police. All right, fine. The problem is when the president jumps in and says they shouldn't do that. Well, now all of a sudden it kind of turns into a referendum on the president. And you can very much agree with the president, as you and I do, but not like the president coming out and calling for these guys to be fired. As we've discussed in a couple of times, I really feel like the proper consequence for Colin Kaepernick is to get booed, and to get booed a lot and loudly. So people can say, you know, you have this viewpoint. We strongly disagree, Colin Kaepernick. By the way, you probably should read up on Fidel Castro, and you probably should get to know some cops so you stop labeling them as pigs and stuff like that. But I don't want Colin Kaepernick is a guy who's terribly misinformed. And I'd like what should the consequence for that be? I think the consequence should be you get booed. I don't think the consequence should be, well, you can never work again doing what you choose to do with your career. Having talked to a lot of people, I think a lot of people would be perfectly happy to throw Colin Kaepernick in jail because they don't like his stance. And that's not what how the First Amendment works. And the President of the United States ought to know that. The President of the United States also, like, shouldn't be acting like a caller to sports talk radio, right? You know, you're supposed to have bigger issues on your plate. Nonetheless, if you look at the polling numbers, significant number of Americans very much oppose players kneeling for the national anthem. They want it to be a unifying moment. They don't see standing for the national anthem as an endorsement of the country in all ways, in all times, for everything. We all recognize that America has flaws. We all recognize the country has problems and we want to fix them and we want to address them. But we all stand anyway because we love the country. And it's Kaepernick really, you know, tried to make, no, I don't believe that. I believe that standing is an endorsement of everything that happens in America, including police brutality. And I just think it's such a fundamental misunderstanding of what the national anthem is that it should be argued against. But I don't think the president is necessarily, is basically not helping anything by coming out and saying, oh, we should fire people for this. And he turned it into a referendum on himself. But unsurprisingly, a lot more players chose to take a knee this last weekend.
You just said it. Ultimately, this was supposed to be originally Colin Kaepernick's issue was about the police and the treatment of black people. And how many people do you think would have been on a knee if Trump had never said anything? So the number of people that were on a knee or did something else this weekend was largely because now the flag is a referendum on Trump, which... pretty sure Trump's going to win
it's
that.
It's good for Trump.
It's great for Trump.
You know, like they basically played right into it. Except I don't think, I mean, entirely separately, there was a time where in the last administration where people said that there was something inherently unpatriotic. You know, remember Rush Limbaugh's I Hope He Fails?
Right.
A lot of people said that was unpatriotic. How dare you expect the president? Well, here's the thing. If you disagree with what the president wants to do, well, then of course you hope he fails, right? You don't want the country to fail. You don't want the country to suffer. But you basically think the solutions are not actually solutions. They would exacerbate problems instead of solving them. Well, we're seeing this same mentality applied from the other direction. The idea that, you know, now all of a sudden criticizing to kneel for the flag in order to protest the president now is blurring the line between the president and the flag, and they're not the same thing.
No, not at all. So let's get to our second bad martini.
The bad part.
Yeah, that's the reaction to this, because the rationalizing and the nuance and the over-the-top reaction from a lot of people in the NFL and beyond is just absolutely sickening. Bill Maher was on Friday night, had Bob Costas as a guest, and I don't even think the Trump speech, I guess it might have been over by then, but I don't know if they had seen it. They were talking about CTE more than the anthem protest with Bob Costas, but he called people mouth breathers if they think that football players or any other athletes should only focus on sports when they're on the field and not bring their politics onto the field. We'll get to Costas again in a moment. There's other people who are saying, oh, we're not disrespecting the flag. It's about a specific issue. That's what Kaepernick was all about. Colin Kaepernick's quote was, I'm not going to stand up to show pride in a flag or a country that oppresses black people and people of color. So he is saying that the country is oppressive. Yesterday, the Pittsburgh Steelers made headlines before the game with the Bears by announcing that the team would not be on the field for the anthem. And because the NFL is a copycat league when it comes to structuring offenses, defenses, and everything else, two other teams later in the day in the same game, the Titans and the Seahawks, decided also to not take the field. One Pittsburgh Steeler defied that order, and that was Alejandro Villanueva, who is a three-tour veteran in Afghanistan. He was absolutely going to be out there, and he was. And after the game, probably upset because he lost to the Bears, Mike Tomlin was upset, it would seem, at Villanueva for being out there, saying, like I said, I was looking for 100% participation. We were going to be respectful of our football team. So to Mike Tomlin, the football team's more important than honoring the country. And even inside the locker room, it appears that the vote was very, very narrow to stay in the locker room. So it's not like there was this great team unity anyway. And after the game, James Harrison appears to have been upset that Villanueva was out there, saying, we thought we were all in attention with the same agreement, obviously, but I guess we weren't. Another guy on the team, Chris Hubbard, an offensive tackle, said we all knew that Villanueva was going to be out there. Everybody understands that. Bob Costas on CNN today, Jim, talking about why the anthem is always in reference to the military and why can't we honor other people, including teachers and social workers. Here's what he said on CNN.
School teachers and social workers are patriots. And yet at Yankee Stadium, we can shift sports. Not only do they play the national anthem before the game, but they play God Bless America at the seventh inning stretch 81 times a year at home games. And in every case, they say, please rise as the Yankees honor a military guest. I have no problem with that. I stand every time I'm in the ballpark, no matter what it is, I stand. And I certainly respect the military person they bring out there. But there's never a school teacher. There's never a social worker. Patriotism comes in many forms.
We'll get to one other thing in just a moment, Jim, but I want to get your, give you an opportunity to respond to all the stuff I just threw out there, from the teams not even being on the field to these ridiculous nuance attempts from Costas and other people. What do you make of it all?
Greg, where's pink eye when you need it? Oh, thank you, Bob Costas, because you know, it's turned into a Sunday night ritual. You've had a good day of football. You've enjoyed the 1 o'clock games. You've enjoyed the 4 o'clock games. And you know, NBC Sports has the Sunday night game. And here comes Bob Costas. So let's take a look at the annual deficit figure. No, you know, it's gun control. It's the Redskins' name. Bob Costas, you know, we thought we were getting away with it once Olbermann had talked himself out of another job. But no, we got to have Bob Costas come out and lecture us one more time on, you know, whatever's on his mind. Backing up a little bit, I don't get how you can be upset with Villanueva. I mean, if anybody's earned the right to say, you know what, guys, I'm sorry, I can't agree with this stance. I got to do my own thing, right? Like, you know, when people say, you know, the irritation you saw from, let's assume and let's hope that's just the defeat speaking on the Steelers, and that they're kind of letting Villanueva going his own way, being his, you know, being a scapegoat for their irritation with themselves for losing the game to the mighty Chicago Bears. Let's assume it's that, because otherwise this is a really bad look for them. Because here's the thing, you know, as I understand, Greg, you know, Greg, the New York Jets all locked arms before the game. Owner Christopher Johnson, the brother of Woody Johnson, our current ambassador to the United Kingdom, a guy who donated a lot of money, big time Republican donor, donated money to Trump. They all locked arms, and it's a nice sign of unity. We're all doing the same thing. But deep down, Greg, you know what unity really made me feel happy yesterday?
What's that?
The gang tackling, right? The fact, you know, I don't really care if my team all has the same political views or social views or anything. If you guys have really strong disagreements, fine. I just care that you cover your man when you're in the zone. Right? And so I don't understand. Like this is why, you know, the irritation and the elevation of this. I don't know if the Pittsburgh Steelers are genuinely divided by what Villanueva did. They really shouldn't. This is where we're not really supposed to be fighting about all this stuff, because we want to watch a game and enjoy ourselves. And I don't understand, if you know, how you could possibly be mad at Villanueva. Now, the one guy you can get mad at is Shady McCoy up in Buffalo, who decided to stretch during the national anthem, which struck me as a even Colin Kaepernick, like, he sat in that first preseason game. Everybody asked him what he was doing. And afterwards, he decided to take a knee. And he struck that was sort of that medium step. I think he recognized that refusing to stand and sitting was, on some aesthetic level, more disrespectful than taking a knee. I think we could see taking a knee as sort of the symbolic of, like, wearing raising the flag upside down, which is a sign of distress. It's a way of saying things are not as I want them to be in this country. But, you know, also in a country that is heavily Christian, the context of taking a knee is also one of reverence. It's kind of interesting that this is seen as disrespectful, whereas in a religious context, this is probably one of the most respectful things you can do. Point being, people who want to kneel want to say something is wrong in this country and we're not happy with it, which is nothing wrong with inherently wanting to do that. The question is whether by doing that while everyone else is standing for the flag, are you improving the situation? Are you making things better? Are you creating better understanding? Are you just exacerbating tensions? One of the most dramatic ironies we saw earlier in the preseason, Greg, was when the Cleveland Browns decided to form a circle and they all kneeled, held hands. And they did it in the name of unity, Greg. So in order to promote unity, they did something different from what everyone else was doing at that moment. Which is kind of the opposite of what I think they have genuinely good intentions. And a lot of people said, they're a bunch of spoiled, overpaid brats and all. Fine. You don't like professional athletes doing this, fine. A lot of them will emphasize they're not doing this out of they've had bad experiences or they feel personally mistreated by the United States. They're doing this for people who don't have this platform, who don't have this voice. And I don't think that's necessary. Like when you're in a certain level of money, you no longer allowed to offer your opinion on things, because if that's the case, there are a lot of high priced, TV talk show hosts, radio talk show hosts, authors, writers. You know, at some point you'd price yourself out of your First Amendment rights. I don't buy into that either. So that's where we are with this. I hope the Steelers kind of come out and give a more respectful response to Villanueva's decision. And I think that it's not a wise choice to antagonize him. Also rather revealing, I'm just seeing this coming across the wire now, his jersey is now the first one listed when you go to the NFL store. What does that tell you, Greg?
Speaking of the NFL, here's my last one on this issue here. The statement from Roger Goodell on Saturday, it's a pretty short statement. The NFL and our players are at our best when we help create a sense of unity in our country and our culture. There's no better example than the amazing response from our clubs and players to the terrible natural disasters we've experienced over the last month. Divisive comments like these demonstrate an unfortunate lack of respect for the NFL, our great game, and all of our players, and a failure to understand the overwhelming force for good our clubs and players represent in our communities. Jim, I'm going to get to the big part in a second here, but first of all, in terms of the amazing response from our clubs and players, yes, they had a higher platform because they're pro athletes and the league exists and gives them that platform, but to quote our former president, Barack Obama, when it comes to Roger Goodell trying to take credit for what people like J.J. Watt did in raising tens of millions of dollars, you didn't do that. And then it says, these demonstrate an unfortunate lack of respect for the NFL. I think the NFL has done an excellent job of reducing the amount of respect for itself when it comes to treatment of player health, when it comes to its slow response to domestic violence, when it comes to watering down the game, the horrible product they had on the field for at least the first 2 weeks. It looked like it was a little better maybe on Sunday of this week. But Roger Goodell has done a plenty good job. Deflategate, whatever you want to say about that and all these other controversies and all these other things off the field. Roger Goodell's done a perfectly good job of reducing respect for the league all on his own.
Exactly. He doesn't need the competition. Yeah. Do you think somebody in the league office was saying, like, okay, Roger, the fans already can't stand you. They see you as meddling when you shouldn't. They're burning you an effigy in New England. Everyone thinks the rules of the league are kind of applied arbitrarily and incompetently. People still haven't forgotten the whole Ray Rice thing. Probably the best thing you could do is offer this marshmallow statement that kind of sort of criticizes Trump, but never really names him and never is quite so direct about it. But so the players will feel like the Trump fans will hate it. Trump himself is almost certain to respond to it. But the players won't feel particularly supported, and you will end up alienating everyone. So if that was the game plan, way to go, Roger Goodell. Way to go.
That's exactly right. And he's always tap danced around the anthem issue before Trump got directly involved like he did this time around. And some might say Roger Goodell is still a little bit bitter towards the right because his dad lost a Senate race, I believe in the early 1970s, to a guy named Buckley, who was running a third-party race. But anyway, that's a whole other story. Quickly to our third martini, Jim, and this one happened on Friday, but we can't let John McCain off the hook because it's just unconscionable. On Friday, John McCain once again announced that he was opposed to the latest Republican version of health care reform in the Senate. This is the Graham-Cassidy bill, co-sponsored by his very good dear friend, Lindsey Graham. But once again, John McCain has deluded himself into believing that the only way we can get this done is through a bipartisan approach. Apparently, he hasn't realized that the Democrats have no interest in having a bipartisan approach, unless, of course, it involves single payer. There was some sort of half-hearted effort to do some sort of fix to the individual market that collapsed after a little bit of negotiation. So John McCain is the second no vote, along with Rand Paul, who is certainly worthy of mention here as well. And, of course, you've got the ladies of Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski, who are kind of Hamlet on the Potomac right now, as they like to say, and will probably vote no as well. So they're making a few little tweaks here, hoping to win over Collins and Murkowski and get this thing into a conference. But right now, your prediction of failure is looking much more likely. And John McCain, once again, sticking his finger in the eye of President Trump is a big part of it.
You know, on Friday morning, there's always a danger to making predictions in you know, public life and politics and writing, because there's always a chance it'll turn out to be completely accurate. And there's always a chance it'll go really, really wrong. But Friday morning, I kind of look, all right, so if I were really cynical, how would I expect the healthcare debate and the idea of the debate over Graham-Cassidy to go? Well, I mean, for 46, 47, you know, Senate Republicans, they're on fine with it. They really want to say, look, they tried their best. They wanted to repeal and replace Obamacare. If it passed, there was a possibility the House, you know, there was some indication the House would just pass it, send it to Trump's desk, and boom, get it elected, or, you know, get it passed, and there, we've actually done it. We've we made a promise, we kept it. Get off our back, please reelect us. But for, you know, this handful of Senate, Rand Paul has the position of he really, really wants to repeal his Obamacare. He just never finds the bill that goes far enough for him. Now, also, you know, people look at it, recognize, wait a second. There's been a huge expansion of Medicaid in Kentucky. There are a lot of Kentucky residents who are on it. Probably a lot of Kentucky residents who voted for Rand Paul are on it. So on the one hand, Rand Paul could repeal it, but then all of a sudden people who had gotten used to having this system of insurance to take care of them, and previously they had none, would be like, wait a minute, what? I just lost something I had. All of a sudden I'm in worse shape. I'm angry at you, Rand Paul. So Rand Paul gets to say, no, I totally oppose Obamacare, but I don't want to support this particular bill. And oh, by the way, I'm never going to actually come around to find the perfect bill that exists. Murkowski and Collins have this reputation of being sensible moderates. And so they want to replace Obamacare, but not in a way that would ever hurt anyone or anything like that. Or they're just going to do what's best for their states. And obviously, look, there are a lot of, you know, they're getting a lot of local editorial boards sending them, you know, hosannas and hoorays for the stance that they take. And then there's John McCain. Look, we all know John McCain has a very serious health issue. We don't know how much longer John McCain is going to be around. He's thinking very seriously about his legacy as a senator and the legacy of his life. Now, at one point during the motion to proceed, John McCain surprised a lot of people by saying, hey, you know what? I'm going to let this debate go. I've got real problems with this bill, but I'm going to vote for it to continue the debate on this because I think maybe we can get somewhere useful with this. You know, we all saw the reaction then, you know, snotty people saying, oh, is the brain cancer affecting him? You know, he just got shredded. He just got torn apart, denounced, demonized. And then a couple of days later, he voted no. He said no, he was not going to keep the – he voted no on the bill, and it died. And all of a sudden, John McCain was a hero again to all the folks on the left and all the friends on the media who loved him for a long time, particularly in 2000 when he was running against George W. Bush and kind of criticizing him from the left. All of a sudden abandoned him in 2008 when he was the Republican nominee and then went back. You know, the amount of media praise for McCain is directly proportional to whether he's blocking Republican goals or whether he is helping Republican goals. Well, here we are. Basically, you know, I suppose Collins and Murkowski haven't said they're 100% no, but I believe over the weekend Collins said, look, it's really hard for me to see myself voting for this bill. So Graham Cassidy is probably not going to pass, despite the fact that it's got Lindsey Graham. Lindsey Graham could not get his good buddy McCain to support it. This is where we are. And so basically, Democrats are happy they get to keep Obamacare. McCain, Murkowski, Collins, and Rand Paul will probably all be pretty happy because they get to say that they, you know, stood up for their states and weren't going to – they were mavericks, et cetera, et cetera. And 47 Republicans get to say, look, we tried. And you need us there because someday we'll get rid of Obamacare, even though I think it might now be with the current context of the Senate, I'd say it's particularly unlikely that Obamacare ever gets repealed in any significant way. Happy Monday, everybody.
John McCain's most important constituency is happy, though, as you mentioned. That's the media. So, Jim, a depressing way to start the week. But again, congrats to the Bears and the Jets. And
I was going to say, wait, who's depressed, Greg? I'm happy.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Tuesday for the next Three Martini Lunch.